local live talk show. Dial and speak. Phone lines are open at 922-2700, area code 740 for the Dover and New Philadelphia area. Call 254-9000 if you're in Port Washington, Janayton, Hutton, Tuscarawas, or Newcomerstown. Here's your host of Dial and Speak, Dr. Andrea Fanti.
Good morning. Welcome to Dial and Speak. Thank you for joining us this morning. We are broadcasting live from now until 11 o'clock. We are also being heard on the Internet at www.wbtclive.com. And we welcome listeners who are listening via their computers. We have with us a gentleman who has been here several times before, and I'm just going to tell you a little bit about him. His name is Casey Coars. And Casey was born in this area, and he left as a school-age child and moved to Columbus. But he has a lot of family here, and I'll let him probably mention a couple people that he wants to say hello to. But he was on as a guest a couple years ago. We had him on because he contributed to an anthology, a book of writings. And he wrote part of it because of the correspondence he had with Andre Debuse, who was a very famous writer, and he might mention that just in passing. But he was on as a guest, and we had a wonderful program, and we got to talk. And I kind of feel sort of partially proud of the fact that he enjoyed it so much that he decided he was going to start a interview program with authors only, because we have authors on once a month, twice a month. And he decided he felt there was a void, and that the world needed an interview program where authors are interviewed. And I think it's a wonderful idea. So Casey went back and started it, and he does it on the Internet, so it's available to everyone. And I could just go on. I could spend a half an hour telling about you, so I'm going to quit. But anyway, he is with us today for the full hour. He's going to talk about whatever he wants to talk about. First, I really wish you'd tell people again how they can, you know, get to your website, because it's unique. And he's got thousands, tens of thousands of people all over the world who listen. So with that introduction, I just want to say how happy I am. And Casey drove from Columbus to be here in person. He's not doing this over the phone. So welcome, and I'm really excited about this hour. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Andrea, and thanks for your support of the website. You've been you understood and you got what I was doing from the day I walked in the door. And a lot of people have. That's very refreshing. And the way you access my website is you go to www.kacekowars.com, and that will take you to my website. And you can actually spell my name five different ways, and it will get you to my site, because I've had my name misspelled in newspapers and magazines. And everything bounces to the right one, so you can spell it K-A-S-E-Y. You can misspell it, and you'll still get there. And it's all of the interviews that I've done, which number about 65 now, are available online for free. I'm in a process right now of archiving them into the most recent, the most popular, and then archived by genre as we go forward, because I simply have a wealth of information on the site, and I need to condense it a bit.
And make it easier to access if somebody likes mysteries or someone likes whatever genre they like. Let me give the phone numbers. I neglected to do that. 740-922-2700 or 740-254-9000 if you'd like to speak to Casey. You know what I really love about what you're doing is that you had a passion. You loved books. I mean, when you came in here, the whole start of this thing of writing to Andre Debuse is because you loved books. I mean, you can just tell by talking to you, and I feel that way. I mean, I get excited every morning, you know, just getting up, and I go to the computer, and I order my books from the library, and I have them all arranged, and I know that feeling. I mean, the word bibliophile, somebody who loves books.
Yes.
And you love that, and you've taken your passion and turned it into, you know, a really wonderful business. Now, what I was going to ask you, it's really not lucrative. I don't think you're making big bucks yet from it. Hopefully you will.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I had the rare opportunity this morning to spend 2 hours in my car driving over here. It's a beautiful spring day, a bit cool, but beautiful. And I was thinking back over the last 20 years, really, when this journey began, and I've probably spent over $100,000 developing my website. If you take travel, money I spent working on biographies that were never published, novels that were never published, then just acquiring the equipment, the promotion, the maintenance of the website, because to do what I do, it has to look easy. And to make it look easy is very expensive. And so now I'm at the point where Sean Rowe, who's an author who wrote a book called Fever, he refers, and Malcolm Gladwell coined the term, but it's at the tipping point where I'm now getting, probably this month I'll have 30,000 hits on my website. and I'm not going to give it away. So I'm being very, very thoughtful about any direction I take the website. And I turned down a sponsorship 30 days ago from what would have been a very lucrative outlet, because had I accepted it, Andre Dubuque would have come down from heaven and killed me. And so I will stay true to my vision, which is to interview quality authors. I will include poets, playwrights, and I've also opened the door to memoir because it's such a popular genre now. But I'll never compromise who I have on the show just simply to make money.
Well, I admired that, and I sort of figured where you were leading, that sometimes when people give you monetary support, they want to control things.
Right.
And it takes, you know, a strong person to keep true to their goal. And I'm sure there'll be other ones who come along who will, you know, who will go along with your vision and allow you to do what you want to do. But I know, you know, that we've talked before, and it's difficult to toe the line and do what you want to do. But I you know, as a consumer, I am glad that you're doing that, because there's certain genres. You mentioned poetry, for instance. That's not very lucrative as far as selling books. And I hope he's listening. We have Joe McLaughlin, who is very active in the Tuscarawas County Writers Guild. I know you're going to be speaking there.
Right, in October.
In October. And he's a poet. And when he comes on, I mean, he reads poetry. And I am not much into poetry, but listening to him read it, you know, it's something that we all need to be exposed to, even if it's not something we do every day. And we might find that we really love it.
Yeah, and I'd like to mention on my website, I have a couple what I consider national treasures up. And if you go to my website and you listen to Anthony Hecht read his poetry, I had the honor of interviewing Mr. Hecht in July of 04, 3 months before he died. And you click on the interview and you listen to it, and he reads five poems. And his voice is like I would imagine Shakespeare's would have been. And I just had him read five poems in just a brief discussion. And I was so moved by one of his poems that I had to take a break because I had tears running down my face. And that's when I know I'm on the right track. And also with poetry, if you listen to X.J. Kennedy, I heard him down at the Suwannee Writers Conference. And he is so entertaining and he is so fun that I had him on the show. And it was the only interview I've ever done where I said, X.J., you just talk for 45 minutes, do the shtick you did last night, and it was absolutely awesome. And I also do some offbeat things. I'm calling this, this interview is going to be posted on my website because I get a lot of emails from people, so I'm going to answer some questions. One of the more interesting interviews is Pia Tavila, T-A-A-V-I-L-A, and she teaches poetry to deaf students at Gallaudet University. And I met her at Suwannee, and she talks on the show about how she teaches poetry, pounding on the desk and running around the room to teach cadence, and how she met Gandhi, and how when she was in India, she was trying to teach sign language to the deaf students, and the teachers would pound the students on their knuckles because they didn't accept the fact that they couldn't hear.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to hear that type of interview in today's media. And you'll always hear it on my show because I don't care whether I make any money at it or not. The spiritual mentor of my show is Andre Dubuque, Warren Zevon, who's a songwriter who died. And I try to represent those that are no longer with us but held to their vision. And I'll never veer from that. So I'll always have poets on. I'm working on getting Jim Harrison, whose new book of poetry is fabulous, on in June, in May, and the lineup of authors I have in May is, I'm even impressed myself, and it's gotten to the point after a couple years now where I either know the author, I know their publicist, so I can pretty much get anyone I want.
Our guest is Casey Coars, and he is a gentleman who is a native of this area, and he has a website, he has a program where he interviews authors of all different genres, and you can go to this website, you can hear these interviews. It costs nothing at this point. They're archived. It's not like our program where you have to tune in at a certain time. For people that don't understand it, you go to the website and just click, and they're always there. So if you're in the library, have a librarian help you get to it. If you have a computer at home, just try it. It's so easy. www.kcoars, and I spell it K-A, you said S or C, K-A-C-E-Y-K-O-W-A-R-S.com.
Right. You can use either one.
Right. And just go there and click on the name of the author, your favorite author, someone you've never heard of, and you hear this wonderful interview right on your computer. I mean, it's just... Well, I could talk again. We could talk about computers for 3 hours, how wonderful they are and how they change the world. But you have, what, how many thousand now did you say hits? You get 30,000 a day?
Per month.
Per month.
Like this month in May, I'll have around 30,000 hits from about 100 different countries. And 25% of my audience now is outside the United States, with the United Kingdom being the largest. And I think that is in large part because I regularly interview Ian Rankin, who's a very popular British writer, and the Brits read, they read books probably more frequently than we in the U.S. do. And so the other countries that are growing very quickly are Germany, India, China, and I get emails from people in Japan telling me that because of the local media, they love clicking on my website and they can listen to the interview while they're traveling internationally. And one question I like to ask, I get it all the time, is please make these available in podcasts. And I will do that at some point in time. The reason I haven't is a couple reasons. Number one, I'm a one-man band, basically. And number two, I want to control the distribution of my interviews, so that when I do eventually figure out who I want to distribute my interviews, they will be offered in a podcast MP3 format, and people will be able to download them. But I don't want to just do it indiscriminately, because I have to be careful with the authors, too. For example, Michael Conley, who is has a new book coming out on May 8th called Crime Beat, which is a collection of his journalism when he wrote for the Los Angeles Times, which he then took and parlayed into his career as a fiction writer. Michael's become a friend. I'm interviewing him next week, and I've read in galleys this collection of crime fiction. And Michael's one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. And because my aim was true when I started, Michael makes room for me in his schedule now to do the interviews. And I did allow Michael to offer my interviews as a podcast on his website. And the same with James Lee Burke, who's a friend and a writer I admire. So I selectively allow authors to offer podcasts of our interview. And so Michael Conley's will be available on his site on May 8th, and then in July, James Lee Burke's new book will be available as a podcast on his website.
You know, with technology being what it is, and, you know, even every time we watch a DVD, or even the old audio and videotapes, it's so easy to copy things. I mean, it's, you know, even if you're doing it for your own use. And I know with your program, I'm sure there are people who are, you know, illegally, it's their favorite author, and they're making a CD of it or something, you know, they're burning one. So it's so hard to control that. And I was wondering about that. I mean, there's really not much you can do about that. If they're not doing it for their, you know, for monetary gain, they're not selling it.
Yeah, I really don't care. And I would actually even encourage people, if they know how to do that, to do it. Mm-hmm. What I just don't want to do is... I just want to maintain the integrity of the site, and I don't want it used for political purposes, because you have to be concerned about people editing interviews, taking things out maybe perhaps that I've said, and that came home recently when I introduced a new element to my website with Luis Alberto Urrea, who wrote The Devil's Highway, which was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize in 2005. And for the first time, I offered the interview in English and in Spanish, because I speak Spanish. And the response to the Spanish-speaking interview has been phenomenal. And what I tried to do with this interview is to stay in the middle of the illegal immigration debate, because the country, one of the problems I see is in the media, particularly, is we're so polarized on the left and right that we seem to have lost the dialogue in the middle. And so the history of how I came to know Luis is a story unto itself, but let's just suffice it to say that we've become friends. And whenever it was a Sunday morning, and I'd interviewed Luis back in October of 05 about The Devil's Highway, and we both saw what was coming, and I turned on the television, I saw 500,000 people in the streets in Los Angeles. I had Luis's home phone number, I called him, I said, let's do an update on the website about what's going on, and let's also do it in Spanish. And Luis is very much in demand right now as a speaker, but because I followed him when he wrote The Hummingbird's Daughter and The Devil's Highway, he granted me the interview. And then we did a half hour in Spanish designed to help people that are here that speak Spanish but not English, telling them where there are safe places they can go to try to learn how to speak English and to try to dilute the fear that they're feeling as they walk the streets. And that's not a political statement. That's as a human being concerned about people that are living in fear.
Okay, let me just tell people who are listening, the author that he's discussing now is, the name is spelled L-U-I-S, Alberto, A-L-B-E-R-T-O, U-R-R-E-A. And I've seen the name, and in fact, I've seen it on your website, and I saw, you know, the commentary that you had about him and all that, and I didn't know it had been done in Spanish. But I asked you before the program if this had been translated from Spanish into English, and you said no, it was written in English. Was he born here in America, or did he come over?
Luis was born in Juarez, and his mother was American from I believe, New York, if I'm wrong, Luis, excuse me. His father was fairly influential in Mexico, but he's had dual citizenship when he was born and has been a U.S. citizen all of his life. He teaches at the University of Illinois in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And it took him 20 years to write The Hummingbird's Daughter, and it's one of the most amazing novels I've ever read. And the first time I interviewed Luis, it was about The Hummingbird's Daughter. And if you're tired of reading a book where you start and you finished what's, you figured out what's going to happen by the 25th page, I recommend The Hummingbird's Daughter, which is now available in trade paperback. Mm-hmm. As something that I can think will be a classic. And then The Devil's Highway, the reason I so highly recommend that is it's the true story of 26 men that went into the desert in 2001 trying to cross over illegally, and 14 of them died due to the exposure of the desert. And so Luis wrote this book, and he had access to the Border Patrol. And it really is a balanced view of the risk that people take to get into our country. And as the updated interview said, in a lot of cases, it's simply a matter of trying to feed their families. But if you listen to the interview in English, you'll hear some figures about how much money the illegals pay into Social Security and into taxes, which they'll never get back. And you just don't hear that type of thing. And so we really go into that in depth. And so while we were talking, when we were done, I said, now let's do it in Spanish. And I didn't script in advance, so the grammar's not perfect, but I did that intentionally because I didn't want people to think that Luis and I had worked this out ahead of time. So my Spanish is a little bit clunky at times, but it gets the point across, and that one lasts about a half hour.
Interesting. So that appeals, I'm sure, to a whole different audience that the audience is not used to having that type of information available.
Right.
People who have limited English, and we do have a lot of people in this country who speak Spanish. But I've not read his books, and I did see the interview on your website, and again, there are only a couple Latin American authors that are very, very well known in the United States, South American and
yes.
Latin America, and
most are translated.
Right.
Eva Brothman translates Gabriel Garcia Marquez's work, and most are translated. Luis does write with a native tongue, and I think with the Spanish thing, I think I've probably tapped a new market that I had not seen. And that's what's so fun about what I'm doing, is because no one is telling me what to do, I'm just, the best description I can give you is that I was thinking about this morning. I'm kind of like Don Quixote, and it's kind of a 2006 version of Don Quixote, where 2 years ago people thought I was crazy, but I actually did see the windmills, and my wife, Tina Rich, who's Sancho Panza, is telling me those aren't windmills, that's an alternative fuel source, and there's money to be made here. And so I think in the new version, Don Quixote's not crazy, and he's probably going to end up making some money off this, but it's a byproduct of it, not the reason I started.
Well, and I was going to say too, I know you mentioned before that your wife has been very supportive, and I mean, this takes up 110% of your time, more or less, and I know you had a lucrative business or job before all this. So I was, one of the questions that I was going to ask you is how you managed to do what you love and still live a lifestyle that you like to keep up. So how do you do it?
That's a good question. And my wife, Tina Rich, without her support, both financially and emotionally, I could not have done this. And There's also the combination of I was an old hippie, and I'm approaching 50. I'm 48, soon to be 49, and I've had some health scares. I have a fairly serious health issue, which fortunately with medication and excellent doctors and excellent health care, I should live for a pretty good long time. But I don't take that for granted anymore. And I reached a point in my life where I said, do I really care what the S&P 500 does next year, or do I care more about trying to promote literacy in the United States and around the world? And the obvious, if I ever have to answer that question, I think the answer is fairly obvious. And so within the next 60 days, I'll be phasing out of the brokerage business completely, except in the few isolated cases with people I've worked with for 20 years. But I'll no longer solicit or do business because I'm working at Barnes & Noble full-time right now, learning the book business from the way a book enters the back door and ends up on the shelves. And I'm working 40 hours a week, and I'm working harder than I've ever worked in my life out at the Easton store in Columbus. And we've got a promotional thing there in June, which we can either talk about an hour after the break, whichever you prefer. You want to just keep going?
Yes. Well, we'll go for a while, and then we'll try and let you get through it.
This explains exactly what I'm doing. Is I wanted to back-end test what I'm doing to see if it had value as a teaching aid and as a marketing tool for consumers. So I did some substitute teaching at high schools for 2 months in January and February, and I taught the enriched Spanish classes and enriched English classes at Worthington High Schools. And the students took to my website. They loved it. And the fact that I spoke Spanish, the Spanish kids loved it. And I realized, okay, you know, that's an option I have, is to teach Spanish. But not only was that physically demanding, I don't have a teaching certificate. And there are wonderful teachers out there. Anybody who wants to be critical of our education, I say go work with the teacher for a week. Follow them around. Get up. Stand in front of a class for 6 hours and then do everything you have to do. And then before you complain, take a good long look at how tired you are and what went into it. And but that's, I won't get on that soapbox.
Well, especially those who think that teachers make too much money. That's the big issue down here. So
that's insane.
Uh-huh.
But the other thing I wanted to do was, is what I'm doing of value in bookstores. And so I had actually had some correspondence with the CEO of Barnes & Noble back in July of 2005, where I had sent him a proposal on what I was doing in terms of my website. And it was pretty amazing because I put together a very professional proposal, because I was a stockbroker for 25 years. I understand business. I know how all that works. And I priority mailed it to him, and he got it, I think, like on July 3rd, right before the July 4th weekend, and I got a personal email from him that day, telling me that he was going to take a look at it. And over the next month, they ultimately made the decision not to do anything with it at this point in time. But all the emails came from Steve Riggio, the CEO of Barnes & Noble, and I was just blown away that he took such an interest in it personally. So I looked around, and serendipity has followed this project to the point where at times it's frightening. And the man who really got me interested in reading, Richard Kitchen, who just died about 4 months ago, his son Ken was the assistant manager of the Easton store in Columbus. And I called Ken and I said, I'd like to come to work at Barnes & Noble and learn about the book business. And so Ken hired me 60 days ago, and I've been working there full time to see if my concept works. And here's the story I'll leave you with on that, is that number one, it does. And Lee Martin is a gentleman I interviewed back in May of 2005, and this is how the publishing business works. There are so many barriers to entry that it's so hard to get a novel published. And Lee Martin is the director of creative writing at Ohio State University, wrote a novel called The Bright Forever, which was fabulous. And Lee sent me a letter, and he said, I love what you're doing for writers. Here's an advanced copy of my book, The Bright Forever. And if you have time, you know, I'd love to appear on your show. I read the book. I was stunned. I thought it was fabulous. I called him, and we tried to get a venue at Ohio State. We were unable to. Lee came over to my house because he lives about 10 miles away from me. He came over at 2 o'clock in the afternoon one day. My dog was licking his shoes, which is always a good sign because my dog's a better judge of character than I am. And Lee Martin is one of the most gentle, gracious men I've ever met, and he wrote a stunning novel. and we did the interview. And last Monday, they announced, not the time here is going to be a little warped by the time we get it on the website, but when the finalist for the Pulitzer in fiction was announced, Lee Martin's novel was one of three finalists.
That's wonderful.
With Geraldine Brooks' book, which won, E.L. Doctorow's book, and then Lee Martin's The Bright Forever.
Wow.
Well, here's the reality of the situation. That event has not been noticed in Columbus, Ohio, where I live. It hasn't been in the local paper. It hasn't been in the OSU media. And there are reasons for that. The book editor was on vacation. I'm not trying to point out any, and I'm not trying to place blame any place, because that's not what it's about. But what I wanted to do is on June 8th at 7 o'clock, Lee's going to be at the Barnes & Noble Easton location where I work. And what we're going to do is we're going to do something a little differently. Instead of having Lee stand up and read the first 20 pages of his book, we're going to do about a 20-minute interview where I interview him about our initial interview and then what it was like to be nominated for the Pulitzer Prize, to be a finalist.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll engage the audience in a conversation about writing. Because I refuse to throw in the towel that people in this country don't read. My heroes are librarians and the booksellers that take the books out of boxes and put them on the shelves so the people can find them. And so Lee Martin's book, The Bright Forever, deserves to be read. It was a finalist for the Pulitzer, and I'm selling more copies than they can keep in stock at my store. I'm really hoping to have a big crowd out at Barnes & Noble East End on June 8th at 7 o'clock. The Dispatch is going to do a thing about it. And if I can do that, then each month we'll have a writer out there and have this type of a dialogue between me and the author and then the audience.
Oh, that's a wonderful idea. And that, of course, it's not a political thing, but it's got to do with economics and everything else. You know, the whole idea of the huge bookstores and how they manipulate the things that are bought and the publishers today. I know there are more. Isn't it 90,000 a year? 90,000 new titles? Yes, it used to be 90,000.
That might be low.
I remember hearing you think, one time it was 90,000. Maybe it might be 120,000 now, but it's over. It's a lot of books every year. Titles. Those aren't books. Those are titles.
Right.
And the thing is that they're controlled by the publishers, and you just said it's very, very hard to get a book published. If you are, it's very hard to get an agent, and we hear that all the time, and it's very hard to get published. And there are probably a lot of books like this Lee Martin's book out there that are very good, and nobody's ever going to read them.
I get about probably 10 to 15 books sent to me each week by, I'm on the mailing list for all the major publishers now, so basically every novel that Simon & Schuster, Random House, Harcourt, that they publish, they send me a review copy. And I read books that are so heartbreakingly beautiful, it kills me that they're not finding an audience. And I'm booked. My show is booked for the rest of the year now.
Yeah, but you're getting books that they're already publishing. There are probably a lot that they have never seen. This is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And it bothers me because to make it economically feasible, they are not going to publish a book that might only sell. You mentioned you had 30,000 hits in a month. They won't publish a book that only 10,000 people will buy or 5,000 anymore. I mean, they have to figure 100,000, 200,000, 500,000. And the limited interest, books of limited interest, you know, aren't going to get published. And, you know, that's a whole other subject, but there are ways around that. But it's sad because it's a business like everything else. It's a McDonald's. It's the big, you know, everything big, everything cookie cutter and pretty much the same. And I love to read. But I do find sometimes that I get confused. Even with some of the authors that you've got, I get confused because they're similar. They have a different hero, but he's a retired policeman and he's got really good stories. And they're great, and I read them. But I'm just saying, somebody who's, you know, offbeat, or unless they're really lucky, they don't get a hearing.
And luck does play a very large element in the publishing process. It might be the agent that you send a manuscript to is in a good mood the day they read the book.
Right.
And then the absolute time constraints. I know myself, you know, like I say, the Don Quixote figure that I am, my time right now is so compressed with... I won't use any names of authors because I just wouldn't do it, but I've had people that have won the National Book Award send me emails asking if they could be on my show, and I'm booked through the end of the year now because the publishing cycle, the way it works is I'm reading, people say, what good books have you read lately? The stuff I'm reading now is coming out in the fall and the spring of 2007, so What I tell them is I can't fit you in May, June, or July, but maybe when it comes out in paperback.
Well, we are past our break time. We're going to take the break, but a question I'm going to ask you, and I, you know, to think about is, do you ever wish that you could be one step, because you do get the books and you the ones that are already published, but wouldn't it be fun to be an agent and get to look at these things and make the decision, you know, as to, or would, do you have to decide, does an agent have to decide, will this sell, or is it a wonderful book? I guess the publishers have to decide, will it sell? You know, but it would be interesting to be at that level of decision, you
good,
know.
Good question, and after the break, that's where we'll start.
Okay. All right, we are going to take a short break. Casey Coers will be with us for the full hour. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
40 WPTC.
Good morning. Welcome back to, well, I was going to say to Dial and Speak. Welcome back to Dial and Speak, and we are very happy for you to be with us. I was in the middle of a conversation with our guest, Casey Coers, and I had to switch gears and get back into the radio mode. He is a very interesting person, and 1 hour really isn't enough to talk to him, but we're going to try and squeeze some more information into the next 20 minutes. This is Casey Coers. He is with us for the full hour. He has a a internet talk show that is strictly devoted to interviewing authors. And that's the only thing he does on his program, and it's on the internet. You can access it at any time. It's not at a specific hour, and it's just wonderful. And you said you've done 65 interviews?
Yeah, I guess. Like, I've had Otto Penzler on five times, and so I'm not exactly sure. I've had Tom Cook on. Yeah, I've had Michael Connelly. This will be his third appearance, but I'd guess somewhere around 65.
Okay. If anyone would like to speak to Casey, give us a call at 740-922-2700, 740-254-9000. You can ask him anything. I'm having the opportunity of asking him anything I want to ask for a full hour, which is really exciting. And since books are my favorite topic, I'm in heaven. And there are people, I'm sure, out there who are like that. I hope our library people and all that are listening. Now, hopefully this interview will be on his website, because ours is only broadcast live, and I know a lot of people can't listen at 10 o'clock in the morning. I've heard that from many people. And so we'll try and let you know when he gets it on his website so some of you can hear him. And then once we get them to the website, they'll be able to listen to all your interviews, which is really the reason. I mean, this is so unique. There's never been a time in the history of the world, really, think about it, ever, where you could hear an author live, his own voice, talking about his work within, you know, a time frame where it's current. I mean, there's never been anything like this before.
No, there really isn't. And I think that's what publishers right now are trying to figure out, and advertisers are trying to figure out what to do with me, because...
You're kind of unique.
Yeah, I mean, and let's face it. I mean, Tom Friedman wrote a book called The World is Flat. And I think if you want to read a book about globalization, The World is Flat, he just did an expanded and updated version. And it really... What's happened, Andrea, is that I straddle generations. People ask me, are you afraid somebody's going to copy your concept? And I'm not. And the reason I'm not is because I've been reading 3 to 4 books a week for 20 years. I know the writers. So you can't clone a person's experience. The other thing is that I understand technology that I understand to the point where I understand how valuable it is, but I don't know how to do it. And I have the money to hire people to do it for me. And one of the things I'd like to mention is that we make it look easy. Is my webmaster is Marilyn Knapp Litt, and she lives in San Antonio, Texas, and she does a great job posting the interviews. But I would also like to mention, which I don't think I ever have publicly, that the man that edits my tapes is blind, and his name is Chuck Adkins, and he's the technical director at Voice Corps in Columbus. And serendipity, when I started doing this, I needed somebody that could take the cassettes that I mixed, because I don't know technology, and convert them. And Chuck Adkins, since the day I started, I do the interviews. I take them to his home. In his home studio, he converts them, edits them, takes the noise out as best he can, and we just upgraded our equipment in January, so this interview sound 100% better. And Chuck has done this for free. I haven't paid Chuck anything. When I called him and told him what I wanted to do, he was on board immediately, because he's been in the radio business forever. And Chuck will benefit from whatever financial windfall I get at some point in time. Chuck will share in it. Because the other thing that my website is I really want to do is I approached the National Endowment for the Arts, and you have to be in business 3 years before they'll give you a grant. So that'll be August of 2007. But for people that are visually impaired, This is a wonderful tool that they can listen to authors that they listen to on tape. They can listen to these interviews with authors that they like. So that whole market out there is huge, and it's one that I want to get at because I don't care about the money. So if I ended up going nonprofit with this, that would be fine with me, but I can't be both. And so that's one reason why I haven't taken any sponsorship is once I declare what I am, then I can't do the other. So, but yes, technologically, I don't even know how to upload one of my interviews to my website, but I have people that do know how to do that. And the way I found Marilyn Knapp-Litt was she was Tim O'Brien's website. She hosts Tim O'Brien's website. When she heard my interview with Tim a couple years ago, she called me and said, that's the best interview I've ever heard with Tim O'Brien, and do you need some help on your website? So she's been on board, and I pay her a monthly stipend, but that's what it is compared to the amount of work she puts into it. So there are Chuck and Marilyn. I couldn't do this without them. And so technologically, yeah, we're in reality is, okay, let's say you're a publisher and you do get, or you're a writer, you do get an agent, you do get an editor, you do get your book published. The shelf life of a book in a store is probably 3 to 6 months. And if it doesn't sell, they're going to send it back. So what happens is publishers, I don't know what the cost of running an ad in the New York Times Book Review is, but it's high. And a lot of people aren't reading newspapers anymore. They're getting them online. So they're spending thousands of dollars on advertisements that are being thrown into trash at the end of the day or getting recycled. And so that paradigm doesn't work anymore. And so one of the reasons I've kept my site pure is that I know I sell books for authors. It's Sean Rowe paid me $150 to feature his book for 2 months on my website because his the publisher wouldn't pay that fee. He wrote me a check himself for $150 because he liked the interview so much and linked it to his site. But I understand where the publishers are coming from because here's this wacko in Ohio that's doing this thing. But I knew what I was doing, and authors don't want to tour anymore. I mean, say someone like James Lee Burke, who lives out in Montana in a new home he built. When he has a new book comes out, there's no glamour in travel anymore. They don't want to get on a plane and fly all over the country to sell another 500 copies of a book. So they can come on my website and do what's basically a virtual book tour, and it stays up forever.
And the people who are listening, it's a focused audience. Those are people who are going to buy books. Those are book lovers. It's not like Buckshot where you're getting to 30 million people and you're going to have a couple thousand that are going to buy books. Of the 30,000 that go to your book site, I'll bet 25,000 of them buy books. Maybe 30. I'll bet they all buy books. Now, whether they're going to buy that book depends. But, I mean, just think about the potential market.
Right. Okay, now you go to a Broadway show and an advertiser puts an ad in the Playbill there. How many people are actually going to make a decision based on the ad that they run in that Playbill? But they have to do it because they have money committed to advertising in the arts. And so what the demographic audience I've developed is very attractive to advertisers. And I know that. I was a broker for 25 years. I know how business works. And now I'm at a point where, my site is available for sponsorship, but it's not going to be cheap.
Right. Well, it shouldn't be.
And, it shouldn't be because, it really came to a point about 6 months ago. My wife is a very practical person, and she said, we need to figure out a way to generate revenue from this. And that's why I went to work for Barnes & Noble full-time, was I said, I'd rather do that than continue doing something that my heart really wasn't in. You know, and really, you get to a point in life where you follow your passion. And there's a common theme among the writers that I interview. I interviewed Robert Crace a couple weeks ago. He lives out in Santa Barbara. He writes the Elvis Cole series, and then 2 Minute Rule was a book that he wrote, which is fabulous. And I talked to him for about 20 minutes before the interview and about a half hour afterwards. And he was the nicest guy I've ever talked to. And what he did was he went to my website. He saw the authors I interviewed. And he said, this guy's aim is true. Okay, I've interviewed Anthony Hecht, I've interviewed Andre Dubuis and Tim O'Brien. And more importantly, I've interviewed John Hollander and Anthony Hecht and poets, that people that have, a lot of writers traditionally support themselves by being professors. I met John Dufresne last week, who's a wonderful short story writer. And they tend to teach creative writing because they have families, they have to pay mortgages. And there's a love. They are driven to write. And Andre Dubuis, the senior, actually not senior, but Andre Dubuis, the father, told me one time, if we worry too much about who's going to publish our work, we lose hope to an abstraction. And I tell people, if you're driven to write, you have to write. And the authors I talk to, if there's a common denominator among those that are successful, it is that they are driven to write, and they would write whether their book sold or not. And if you're writing for fame and fortune, I can save you your time right now. You're wasting your time. You're better off learning the craft of writing. And I'm working on a textbook right now on writing creative nonfiction, which is going to be interactive, where I'll have a chapter on writing memoir, which Dr. Nancy Woodson, who's in the English department at Otterbein College, is writing the text using student samples and exclusive interviews from my interview. And then at the end of each section, there'll be a computer icon where you'll click, and I'll have an interview with Jeanette Walls on The Glass Castle about writing her memoir. Mm-hmm. Or it'll be on journalism, it'll be an exclusive interview with Michael Conley about journalism, or Louisa Ray about writing from place. So I don't want to give out the name of the editor or the publishing company because I don't want to get swamped by phone calls. Mm-hmm. And I don't use agents' names when I do my show because I don't want people calling them. But if you love to write, write. And until my book comes out, the best book on writing is On Writing by Stephen King. Mm-hmm. And Stephen King's will still be the best book on writing, but I think mine and Nancy's will be close because it's going to be creative nonfiction. And when I talked to the acquisitions editor last week, who I think is going to buy the book, I told her at night I'd get on my hands and knees and thank God that James Fry did what he did, because it created a furor about the line between fiction and nonfiction, which is exactly what my book is about. And I did open my website to memoir because memoir is a new genre, which is probably one of the fastest growing segments of the population, and I have my own personal opinion on why that's happening. And if you're interested in hearing it, I'll tell you. If you'd rather go in another direction, we go another direction.
Hey, it's up to you. We are almost out of time. We only have about 5 minutes or less, so I was just going to tell you to kind of, I know he's got a whole list of things. I said an hour wouldn't be enough. We could do 3 hours and we still wouldn't cover of it.
I'll come back in 3 months.
Well, we love having you, so you know, do whatever you would like to do to get your message out, and we will just let it go whichever way it goes. Also, as I said, we've got about 5 minutes. If you have a call, we still have time, 740-922-2700, 740-254-9000. And what did you want to get out before you run out?
One thing I would like to say is I used to follow a schedule where I posted an interview every Monday, and so I think people had me bookmarked and went every Monday for a new interview. Because of the nature of the beast now, sometimes books get published on Wednesday. So like for Michael Conley's new book, I think it comes out on a Tuesday or Wednesday. So I do have an area on my website, kcoars.com, spelled however you like, that it says sign up for Casey's newsletter. And what I do with that is that I send an email alert out to anyone who has subscribed, telling them that I will notify them when a new interview is posted. And I cross my heart and hope to die that I would never sell that list to anyone. But it is a way for me to communicate with the listeners when I do post, because occasionally books don't get published on Monday, or in the case of Luis Urrea, I decided I wanted to leave that up for about 10 days because of the topical nature. And you've been a subscriber.
Mm-hmm. Right. I was just going to say, since the beginning, I get one of those. And it's funny because it's personalized. It comes to your name. And I always think it seems like you're getting an email from you because it uses your name.
Yeah.
And it's really a nice thing to get. You know what? I never really realized that there were Mondays. I mean, whenever it comes, I never realized what day of the week. It just pops up whenever it's there.
Well, on Mondays, I normally get over 1,000 hits. And a lot of times that interview might not be current. I might not be new on Monday. So I used to follow a strict Monday schedule, but that's not the case necessarily 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. And so for people that do want to be notified, and as you can testify, I never send out more than one email a week because I hate getting them myself.
Mm-hmm.
And there's never a solicitation of any type by signing up for my email. So.
Not at all. And it doesn't even seem like it's once a week. I didn't believe it was that frequently.
It's not even
10 days, something like that.
Yeah, it's probably more like every 10 days.
Maybe two or three times a month, but it doesn't seem
like that. Let me tell you my lineup for May.
Okay, go ahead.
Michael Conley, Crime Beat. Mm-hmm. Okay. Lee Child's new book, which is fabulous. It's Jack Reacher. Laurie R. King, who writes mysteries, and this is the Kate Atkinson, which is the modern day series, not the Mary Russell Sherlock Holmes, but she worked Sherlock Holmes into this one. Harlan Coben, whose new novel just hit stores yesterday, and then I'm trying to get Jim Harrison on his new book of poetry. And June and July are just as good. So sometimes I have to pinch myself. Alice Hoffman should be on.
Oh, Alice Hoffman. I love her.
Yeah, I have to pinch myself because sometimes before I got out of the brokerage thing, I was so pressed for time, and I would find myself at midnight reading a book and kind of saying to myself, man, I got to finish this book. And then I realize I'm going to be talking to this person. Like this afternoon, I'm interviewing Lolly Winston about her book, Good Grief, which is a great book club book. And I also try to be a little sensitive. I try not to recommend books that are too violent or gory or cross over the edge. I don't censor anything, but I try to be aware of my listeners and the demographics of the people that listen to me.
Okay, that's going to really be my last question. I'm in a position, I'm very fortunate, because I only interview once or twice a month. I interview authors, and I get some books. And if I don't like the book, I'll start reading it, then I just toss it aside. I will not interview anybody that I can't be very positive about, because I'm not confrontational, and I won't have anybody on say, your book was lousy, it was too violent, it was this, that. So I just don't interview them.
Right.
And I tell the listeners every time I say that this was a wonderful book, and it sounds boring to them, they think, well, all books, they all must be wonderful, and I have to keep telling them that the reason they're all wonderful is because I'm not talking about the ones that I didn't like.
Very good. That's a very good point. I would like to mention, I've had people say to me, Casey, it seems like you like all the books you read. And I said, well, let me tell you, I get about 15 to 20 books a week. When I do an interview, I put a sign on my door that says, please don't ring the doorbell. I get so many books from UPS and FedEx. Mm-hmm. And if I don't like an author's work, I just simply don't interview them because, I mean, why would I want to have someone on and say, I really disliked your book? There's enough negativity in the world out there. I'm all for reading good books. And people ask me, what do you think of Harry Potter? I said, when I see a kid sitting reading a book, I get excited.
Mm-hmm. And to have him on, he made the trip up here. I know he's from the area, and he likes to come up and visit once in a while. Anyway, we definitely are going to have him back, and he'll be able to tell us every time he comes. He's got.
I'll come on. When I get a contract on the textbook, I'll give you a call. I'll come over, and we'll talk about the textbook.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Okay, KaceyKowars.com. KaceyKowars.com. Go to the library, click on it. You'll be able to hear all these famous authors, their own voices, and it is unique. So I want to thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Andrea. Thanks for your support. You've been with me from the start, and I appreciate it.
Oh, well, I feel like it started here. I mean, you almost got the idea when you did this show, I think.
My father's buried within 5 miles from here, and I'll never forget that.
Yeah. Well, I feel that, you know, that when you were here, you enjoyed radio, and you did such a good job, and you thought there's a real need for this. And there is a need, and 30,000, I mean, I think 30,000 is going to be nothing. I think as word gets out, you know, you're going to have more and more people that are going to go to your website. So best of luck to you, and we'll have you back real soon.
Great.